All right, so we're gonna get started here. We're gonna talk about testing in the cloud. So I was on after Martin, so hopefully I'll be as good as he was or try to get close to that anyway. If not, there's always lunch after, right? So we'll have that. So we're gonna talk about testing in the cloud. So we're gonna talk about agile and how to stay agile, testing in the cloud. And by testing in the cloud, you know, we could do a lot of things in the cloud from testing. We're going to talk about testing, and specifically we're going to talk about load testing. Load testing is going to be a big thing for us, right, moving forward. And thinking about applications and how people are using them and how much bigger applications are today than they used to be, right? It used to be very client-server-centric. Over the past, you know, 5, 6, 10 years, you know, applications have just gotten bigger, right, so and more users using them. So having a strategy to help you do load testing, which is what we're going to focus on, will help out a lot. To introduce myself, you know, I've been doing technology for 15 plus years. I participate in the Visual Studio groups, ALM Rangers, MVP summits, and things like that. I work at InCycle Software. You've seen InCycle, the logo around. You've probably heard InCycle a few times, right? So we're pretty active with Microsoft and in the community. I coach sports a lot with my kids, and then I have all my information there from my contact info as well. Enough about me, so we'll get on to what we're going to do in the session. So in this session, we're going to talk about load testing. So I have a scenario, a very real scenario that I went through with a customer, so we'll have some real-world experience here about how we help them be agile with load testing, right? So when you think about load testing, you don't think about agile usually at all, right? You think about load testing at the end, or you talk about A-B scenarios, or things of that nature. So we're going to see how we can use load testing in a continuous delivery model, perform profiling and metrics and all those great things that you do with regular testing, and then talk about how we can use real-world capacity. So you know, if we think about the load test scenario that we're going to go through, we'll talk about how big that is, right, and what that looks like. So our customer scenario here is that we, one of the largest insurance providers, they're building a new SSO SAML token service, right, to do authentication and things like that. And they wanted to test for real world utilization. So they're building the service from scratch. So the requirements were they wanted to load test at multiple levels. So they wanted to load test SQL and application tiers, and they had, I think, about 30 servers in the actual pre-production environment, so the 2B production environment. So there are a lot of tiers, a lot of complexity in there, and we'll talk about some of those in a second. They also wanted to be able to do capturing metrics and baselining. So when they're releasing to production, they wanted to be able to see if they're getting better or worse, right, at doing that. And also capturing baseline between sprints and things like that. So we're going to talk about how to capture those in the tools and what that looks like. And then also capturing diagnostics. So you think about profiling in Visual Studio, so doing code profiling while you're doing your development or test. We can also do that during load testing. So if we wanted to capture profiling like you do in Visual Studio, you can do that while you're doing load testing. They also wanted to do this as an unattended process. So they wanted to have the build process. They wanted to be able to, at their nightly build, be able to automate a load test so that they could have the scenario where, you know, they could perform metric analysis against it to see if they're getting worse, right? So if you think about from a development perspective, technical debt, you keep building up technical debt, you have to get rid of it at some time. So this helps us surface it a little sooner, right? So we actually get to do load testing and baselining from previous builds so we can see what that looks like. And then we wanted to run for expected user load scenarios. And they also wanted to have minimal hardware, right? So they didn't have much hardware to run this on, but our user count was 60,000 users, concurrent users. So we wanted to run 60,000 concurrent users. And so they had Visual Studio, they had you know, minimal hardware, and so we had to figure out how to do that. So the technologies for our scenario, right? So they had an ASP.NET application tier, they had SQL Server, they were using Windows Identity Management for SAML tokens. They're also using third-party web services, which ended up being sort of the bottleneck, right? So they had some workflow services that were in there. So as part of that, we started off building some of these load tests. So we started off by using web tests and SQL unit tests and things like that, capturing them in Visual Studio. So they use Visual Studio Ultimate. They are standardized on that. So they use that tool as part of that. So they went off and captured a bunch of tests and broke them down into transactional tests and things like that. So one of the things that we want to mention here, too, when you're capturing in Visual Studio, they also wanted to test on different browsers for the ASP.NET application. So when you're capturing in Visual Studio, you will notice that it captures an IE, but you can play it back in multiple browsers, just so you know that you can, you know, test for Chrome and iOS and all those things, right? So having that, you can do that on the playback and the load testing. We'll see that in a demo when we get to the end. Another thing that we had to use in here was the extensibility model that's built into load testing. So in load testing, there's a you get the ability to extend, right? So we had to pick up the SAML token. It wasn't just put into a cookie for us, right, in our load test. So we actually had to pick it up and then extend to Visual Studio with a plugin to pull that out and use it to send back us and the rest of the scenarios as we were going through. So there were a lot of things that we were doing in there to make it very transactional, very easy, and meet their requirements in terms of continuous delivery. So when we think about continuous delivery, just kind of taking a step back here, you know, when we get into continuous delivery and we get into sprints or agile development, you know, one of the things that very first goes out the door is testing, right? So the quality goes out the door, so we got to get the development done, and then the quality, they start shrinking time, right, and development in general. And if we think about load testing is on the very end of that. So that's usually the first thing to go, right? Which is why a lot of companies have, you know, A/B testing and things like that, or A/B scenarios for services. So having these type quality enablements in your process support the A/B, right? Obviously, you can still do A/B without doing load testing, but definitely finding out, you know, where the bottlenecks are so you can fix them. All right. So for the continuous delivery, the common scenario. So they wanted to do smoke testing during their daily build. So they would actually use, you know, some UI tests, some function UI tests. They also wanted to do the load testing. So we, as part of the load testing tools, we keep baselining. We're able to go back and forth with that. We also wanted to put that in the automated build system. So in the automated build system, you can very easily run automated load testing from Visual Studio directly in the build. So if you want to do that, that's an option for you and pretty easy to get to. Right, it's pretty low-hanging fruit. If you have some tests that you want to run and you check them in, you can always use those. And then they wanted to do it for regression. So as part of doing your daily smoke testing type scenario, they wanted to be able to use the bigger, broader set of testing and regression. So when they're doing merging between branches or getting to QA or staging, the regression would just get bigger and bigger. So there's a lot of things in there. So they're really interested in production readiness. So one of the things that they wanted to do is not just throw hardware at problems, right? They don't want to just go out and say, great, we know we expect more user load and the service is slow, so we'll just add more servers. So this was a good way for them to, and a good strategy, not to just go out and, you know, ignore problems that happen because of coding, right? So it gets some good visibility into best practice and quality enablement. All right, and as part of that daily build and the progression, they wanted to be able to capture metrics, profiling metrics. So as part of that command line call that they call in the daily build, they were able to then go out and profile the application. So when they would find bottlenecks, it's not as deep as IntelliTrace, but it does give you hot path, right? So when you're doing your web calls and things like that, you can capture profiling statistics on methods right down to the method level in your .NET code, right? So it helps you out from that perspective. So not only are you capturing metrics from machines in terms of performance counters and SQL recompiles and things like that, but we're also getting application metrics that are pretty deep that we can go back to. And they go on that same timeline as well. So they were very helpful in finding root cause analysis, right? So why is this thing breaking? So they would very normally just go back to the metrics provided by performance counters, find the bottlenecks based on timeline, and then they could drill down into the profiling data if they needed to get that far. And then they would have the same thing during full regression. So they would actually capture the performance metrics, We've tried to capture the profiling a few times, right? We have a lot of machines as part of that regression test in production. They did move to a smaller staging environment, which was enabled us to do the profiling, but when you have a lot of machines, capturing profiling from a lot of machines is pretty hard. When you run a test, we ran a test for 60,000 users at I think about 30 minutes or so, and it was terabytes of data, right, from performance metrics that were coming back from the machines that were participating. So there was a lot of data there. So every counter that was on those machines, we had access to, so we could go back and take a look and find the bottlenecks. And then we were able to baseline and do all those great things. The next thing that we ran into, which is why we're talking about this today, is the testing in the cloud, right? So the story that's really behind this. So there's some good stories about the tools, but more importantly, testing for the real-world scenario. So how do we test for 60,000 users? And so how many of you in here today use Visual Studio for load testing? You have a few. How many of you have used load testing outside of Visual Studio with the controllers and agents? All right, perfect. Anything over 1,000? Okay, perfect, two. All right. So when you're using the load testing tools, they're very capable of scaling up. So you can scale them up pretty far. So one of the issues that we had was that we didn't have much hardware available. So as part of that, we turned to using Windows Azure to distribute across and have a controller agent pattern. So we had the controller locally with the machines, and then we had the agents outside. And because they were doing pre-production testing and very much A-B type tests, they were able to use the public internet, which was great. Let's see if I have it on the next screen. Yeah. So they have a lot of hardware. They wanted an automated deployment process, so we were able to do that through Visual Studio. So we could actually deploy into Azure using Visual Studio, and we could spin up machines and install test agents and configure them in an automated fashion. We could also scale up, right? So we could get 100 machines pretty easily and use them for 30 minutes and then turn them off, right? We didn't have to go out and buy hardware that's going to be idle for some period of time. We would just scale them up, do our tests, and then tear them back down again. So it's pretty easy from a scalability perspective. And then back to our real-world scenario of having 60,000 concurrent users, it's not easy, right? So it's easy to do it in Visual Studio and say, great, we have all these agents everywhere. But when you get down to it, so having hardware and having network and bandwidth and all those things to support that are pretty hard, right? So going out and having to say, hey, we want to go off and do testing every quarter because we're going to do a release and we need, $100,000 worth of software, hardware, right? It's not very often people write checks for those sort of things. So we're limited in the hardware resources that we have from a testing perspective, especially load testing. In our real-world scenario as well, we also deployed into Azure. We deployed in different data centers. So the customer base for this particular insurance company was in the U.S., so Azure having four data centers there, we were able to actually deploy agents in different data centers, mark them with tags as being in those different areas, so whenever we did our load tests, we could actually see response times and request times from those particular areas. So if you do have a global application that's used worldwide, you can deploy into all the data centers that are Azure and connect them back just like we did with the ones here. So it does provide a real world scenario and allows you to get across geographies and show load testing that way. All right. So what I'm going to do is we're going to take a look first at the automated deployment. I'm just going to show you the real simple script and what it looks like. We're also going to see I have some machines deployed in Azure, and then we'll do some load testing type scenarios. So some of you have used Visual Studio, some of you haven't. So we'll take a look at that. And then we'll go through that. So, all right. Let's do this here. All right, so we're in Visual Studio. So one of the things that we have in Visual Studio and Azure, if you haven't been out there, is we have the ability here. We have a lot of services in Azure, right? We have platform as a service. We have infrastructure as a service. There's networking. There's all kinds of things out in Azure, right? So. Platform as a service is pretty popular now. Infrastructure as a service is also is equally popular, right? So having machines that are durable instances. For our demo, we're actually going to be using the platform as a service. So it has some scalability that we get to take advantage of. and those sort of things. So they actually just prepare the infrastructure for us. We automate the deployments. And when we scale up, we can actually scale across machines in an automated fashion. So if we scale here just from the web interface, we actually get to scale and configure all of our agents at the same time as part of that. All right, so we're going to go in here. We're going to go into the cloud service here, and we're going to see this guy. So we have a dashboard here. We have three machines running. We do have cores across the bottom, so they do count cores for your machine. So you can see that I've used 15% in my instance. You can have multiple instances of Azure running. And depending on the size of machine you have, it's the number of cores that you use. So in here, we're going to go over to our instances, and we can see here we have three running there. So we're going to use those three. We also have those three in Visual Studio. So if we go back to Visual Studio, take a look at our load testing demo. We'll come back to this in a second. And go up to our load test tools and go to our managed test controllers, right? You can see that those three machines are associated here. So we can use them, right? They're associated. They're out there. They are using the Azure Connect. There's a lot of ways to connect Azure to your local network, but definitely I'm using this one because it doesn't require firewalls or anything like that. All right, and then you can manage them from here. You can tag them. You can do lots of things with them as part of that. All right, so we're in here. We have that set up. If you're testing in Azure, you can also run your controllers in the platform or in the infrastructure as a service, I should say. So if you want to collect metrics from Azure, you can run your test controllers right there in the cloud along with your other platform as a service if you're deploying to that as well. All right, and so for our deployment of Windows Azure, it's pretty straightforward, right? So we're going to do a few things in here. The first thing we're going to do is download the test agent. So I put it out on a drive, and we're going to download it, install it. So we're doing an automated install of it. We're going to adjust our firewall. And then we're going to go through, and we're going to set up our users. And then we're going to configure it, right? So it's pretty straightforward. Same things you'd do going through Qlik and the agents. We're just doing it through batch scripting in PowerShell. It's in a Visual Studio project, and when we deploy this, it gets deployed to the server with it, right? So when we scale up instances, it runs this script as part of that scale up and deployments of those machines. So it's pretty straightforward. All right. All right, so once we have that in place, we get to our machines, which are the three that we have deployed, and then we can start to use them, right? So we'll switch over to that here real quick. All right, so in our load testing demo here, I already have a web test and a load test set up, so we could go ahead and use those as well. We can go ahead as well and record another test too. So I have a test that's coming back to the same machine so we can have performance counters directly on it. As well, so we can go out and record that. So being in Visual Studio, some of you have seen this and some of you haven't, but I'm going to go ahead and just add a web test here. We'll just do a real quick test. So we're going to go ahead and just add a web performance test. So there's lots of different tests you can use. You can use web performance test. You can also use unit tests. So if you're using unit tests for your applications or unit tests for SQL, I definitely had another scenario where I had a customer who was using the BI stack from Microsoft, and they were tweaking it and trying to performance monitor the cubes, the data cubes that they're using in the BI stack. So they ended up using unit tests wrapped around MDX queries to do that. So they could actually get some real-time metrics on, you know, hey, if we go in and change our data cube, you know, how long is it going to take a user to get their data? So they would do that, and they would baseline it and deploy it and those sort of things. So you can use it for just more than web test is really what I'm getting at. So there's a lot of things you can use it for. So I'm going to go ahead and record this, and I'm going to go ahead and go to we use our handy dandy dynamic DNS piece here. I hope it works. And that should get us back to our machine and show us our load testing. All right. Perfect. And I think we want to do 8181. So give me one second here. Let's stop this guy real quick. So I'm going to start over again. I got to use port numbers. I forgot to put those in there. We'll cancel that guy. Let's go ahead and remove this guy. We'll just record here in place. All right. There we go. Hopefully that gets us to the right place. All right, and with that, you'll see it's going to start to populate the load testing tools with all the transactions that we do. So you can do a lot of things with the load testing tools. I talked about transactional data. We talked about building scenarios. So one of the things we can do is record here. We can record small segments. We can put them all back together. So if you think about scenarios and testing sequences that you go through, you can compile those just the same way that you would a piece of code or a UI test. So it works out well. All right, so we're just going to go in here and click a couple buttons, go through the scenario. So you can see it populating on the left side and all that happy stuff. So it's pretty straightforward from a capture perspective. You'll see that it is IE from a capture, but it is just recording the web traffic, right? They're getting the posts for this. So it's not too bad. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and stop this. It's going to go ahead and close this for us. It's going to come back. It's going to try and detect dynamic parameters for us. So if you're using things on your, you're passing parameters on your URLs, it will pick those up and try and pick up those dynamic ones. So if you're going to go back later and use a database to drive that for data-driven tests, it'll try and help you out with that. Another thing we'll also do with this is we'll go ahead and take this web test and we'll go ahead and parameterize the web server so that we can use it across multiple servers. So we'll just go ahead and change this. We'll put in dynamic server here. Perfect. So we'll do that. And then we can use that over and over again. And as part of doing that, it'll go ahead and do a replacement in there. So if you want to do data change-ups and parameterization, you'd use the same type method for that. But we're going to parameterize the web server itself here. All right, to make sure that we got a good test here, we're going to go ahead and just run this test by itself. So this is a standalone test. You can use it. It's pretty straightforward. It'll run the test and show us whether it's going to go through or not. Hopefully everything checks out green, but we'll check that out here. All right. Looks like everything's going to be happy. Perfect. All right, so now that we have a web test, we have it over here on the site. We can use multiple web tests as well. We can rename them. We can make those different features. We might also want to go ahead and tag on another web test here. So we might want to add a call to a web test. So we might actually go in here and just say from web test 2, we're going to call web test 1, right? So when you think about transactional processing, and breaking down your application into pieces that you can reuse, you would do something like that, right? So you can reuse them in there as well. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and save this. So pretty straightforward so far. We'll get into the load test thing here in a second. So as part of doing the load test, we take all these scenarios or all these pieces and build scenarios out of them, and then we come back and we can run them. So I'm going to go ahead and create another load test here. So I'm going to add a new load test. And this is actually going to be the container to run our web test. So it's going to be the driver behind this. It is going to give us a wizard, which is nice, so we can actually go through and pick some of the items that we need from a load test perspective. So we'll have our scenario one here. Maybe we'll just call this, we'll just leave it as scenario two. How about that? Just for lack of names are escaping me right now for something I'd put in there. All right, so we have a couple things on this screen. We have distribution time. So, do we want to take the think times between clicks? Do we want to just run this full blast? How much time do we want to have between test iterations if we're running iterations and those sort of things? So we can go ahead and do that. I'm going to go ahead and use the normal centered distribution time that was recorded. The next thing is going to be our load. So if you're in Visual Studio, excuse me, you'll be able to get it up to 250 users, right? So that's what Visual Studio will support without a controller agent pattern. So you can get up to 250. Once you go beyond that, you'll have to set up some infrastructure to handle some of those things, which I've already done here, so we'll take a look at that. So what we're going to use is we're going to use a step load. So if we think about these two, the difference between these two, one of them is very much constant, right? So we start off with 10,000 users, and we end with 10,000. And the step load pattern, obviously, we get incremental adding of users and scenarios up to some user count. So we can go ahead in here and leave this at 300. We have three agents that will distribute them evenly across the teams. We have our user count here. We have our duration. So we want to add 10 users every 10 seconds and starting at 10 until we reach 300, and then we'll cap out, right? So we can actually do this is very handy whenever you're doing performance profiling and finding out when your application is at a breaking point, right? So instead of going in and, you know, setting this whole thing up to run it at 10,000 and it doesn't work, and then you move to 8 and then 5 and then there's something in the middle, you can usually just run it this way. So you can just go from top to bottom until you reach that breaking point. So and then you'll see your graphs go sideways, right, if that's a good term for it. All right. The next thing we're going to do is just talk about the number of tests, right? So we're going to talk about percentages. So we have some tests that we're going to add. We're going to do it based on number of tests, so we'll have percentages based on that. You can also do it based on virtual users and pace and order as well. All right, next thing we're going to do here is just add a quick test. I'm just going to go ahead and add both of these tests. So we have web test 1 and web test 2. We'll run web test 1 by itself, and then web test 1 is also strung together with web test 2, so it'll run a bigger test as part of that. All right. Perfect. So I found all the tests that were in our project, in our solution, so they'll all show up there for you. So if you have multiple projects, you can, I don't know if you can share them, but you can use all the ones that are in your project, I'll say that. All right. The next thing for us is going to be network mix. So one of the things that we're going to have the ability to do as part of our strategy, and not so much on Azure, right, because when we're using that infrastructure, we already have these type scenarios set up for us, right? If we're using different geographies like Europe and, you know, different parts of the U.S., we can go in and we're going to get real-time distribution. If we didn't have that, though, we could go in and we could add different levels if we needed to. So if we wanted to add, you know, different levels of user bandwidth, we could add those for our test, and we could give them a percentage as well. All right, and then we can also too. I talked about the cross browser compatibility for load testing. So even though we are recording in IE, we can play these back in different browsers. So you'll see here if we add another browser, you can see all the options you have there, and you can add to that. Right, so it's just an XML, and it's a header replacement, right? So sending that header over to the browser to know that this is something else other than IE. So if you have server-side code that's non-UI code that is being specific to browser, then you can certainly send those. All right, and then we can go ahead and adjust percentages if we need to as well. So they give you some sliders. They're always going to equal up to 100. Doesn't matter what you do. I've tried to get it to go over, but it doesn't work. So, all right. So the next thing for us is going to be capturing metrics, right? So that's the most important thing, I think, around load testing, right? So one, the metric of request times, which is important. I'll say it's important because that usually is a starting point for you to go look at things, right? But the other parts of the metrics that you're going to capture, you know, SQL and, you know, ASP.NET compiler and things like that are going to be as equally important, right? They're going to show you the trouble spots for your application. So the request time is going to be sort of the high 50,000 foot level, and then you get to dig into the metrics, right? There's a lot of metrics as part of that. So I'm going to go ahead and add a computer here. I'm just going to add the local host to this, and then we're going to expand that, and it's going to show us all the performance counters on the machine that we can capture, right? So when you add the machine, it's going to query the WMI, and it's going to show you what you can capture from it, which is great. So then we're going to pop those into a database, and we can baseline them as well. All right, perfect. There we go, and we're going to stay away from SharePoint on this machine, but we'll do that. All right. Awesome. So we're almost finished here. So we're in the last part here. So the next is going to be, we know what we want to do from a user ramp-up perspective. We know what metrics we want to capture and baseline against. And now we're going to have our duration. So how long do we want to run this thing? We're also going to have a warm-up period that we can use. So we can use a warm-up period here. You know, maybe we're going to warm it up for 10 seconds. Maybe we have some IIS caches to populate and things like that, or application caches that we don't want to capture as part of our metric. All right, I'm going to go ahead and just run this for 2 minutes here, just so we have some brevity to it. All right, perfect. We'll go ahead and click finish there. And so we have a load test. So we have all the things here. We can go in, we can change them now, we can modify them and get back to it. All right, so this is going to bring us to our next piece. So if you run this in Visual Studio, you can go ahead and run it directly there, right? So if you don't have test settings files, or you know, you're not using a remote infrastructure, you can just run it here, just knowing that the cap is 250. And that's where, whenever we engage with most customers, that's where they are, right? They're in Visual Studio, they run load testing from there periodically, but they don't go beyond that, right? They just hit the 250 cap and it's good enough, right? So, and it's good enough if you're doing internal applications that you really have 250 users, but if you're, you know, doing 250 users for an application that supports thousands, it's probably not a good idea, right? So, want to get a little bit bigger than that. All right, so having this here, we're going to go off and take a look at our local settings file. So as part of our local settings file, there's going to be something that's pretty important in here. It's going to help us scale out to Azure. So we're going to have here our roles. And so in our roles, this is going to automatically be set to local execution. So whenever you start up Visual Studio and you run load testing, it's going to look like this. If you want to use your remote agents, whether that you have them on-premise or you have them in the cloud, you will want to switch those to remote execution. And then you'll just go ahead and pop in your test controller here, right? So you'll put up a test controller, you'll put a bunch of agents on it, and then you'll go ahead and have those here. All right, so we're going to go ahead and do this. So we're going to go ahead and use all of our agents and controllers. If we wanted to use some partial agents, let's say we had, you know, 1,000 of them out there and we wanted to use 200 and we wanted to be in a specific geography, you know, maybe we put a tag on those. And we can, you know, add the tags that we want to have to run our tests against. So if we don't want to use all 1,000 agents and we want to use 20 of them, and we have a tag to do that, we can narrow down the list that we're deploying to. All right. So this is going to be the most important thing here. Also, too, if you're running this locally and you're also running in a controlled infrastructure where you have, you know, it's not gigantic, right? So from a profiling perspective, you can also turn on your ASP.NET profiler as well. So if you want to turn that on, you can capture profiling data internally. So it just requires that an agent be on the machine so it can invoke the profiling on the server. And then it'll be part of your data as it comes back. For this, I'm going to turn it off here. Perfect. So we'll apply that. We'll hit close here. All right. So now that we have this there, we have our load test too that we're going to take a look at. We have our infrastructure. So if we go back to our load test here, manage our test controller that we just added to our remote execution, we're going to see those three agents out there. And those do live out in Azure. So if we were to take one of these here, just to show that it does work. You can connect to your Azure agents, your platform as a service, using remote desktop if you set it up with a certificate, which is what I did here. So I gave it some username, passwords. So if we go out there, we can log directly in remote desktop. So if you have 20 of them, it's a little bit tedious to go to each one, right, and configure and do all that good stuff. That's how we have the automated deployment mechanism. And you'll see there it's got a name, right, computer name, which just hopefully happens to match one in our list. And I think here, so it's E2A. So just happens to be the one that I'm on, right? So we have that here. So just to show that we're using them effectively. So you can go ahead and log into them if you want to. You don't have to because it's automated deployment, right? So they'll be configured already. So as you scale up, you'll see them get registered with your controller. And this will also be, depending on the version that you pick from a deployment perspective, will be Windows Server 2012, which is the default out there right now. So if you need something different than that, you can always get back to 2008 R2 or 2008. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and sign out of this real quick. Perfect. So there's our test controller, we can restart them, we can refresh them, we can do a lot of things from here. All right, so our next thing here we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and take our load test. We're going to go ahead and run that. So as we start to run that, you're going to see it's going to take a little time to invoke the test, right? So it's got to go ahead and distribute across agents. It's got to tell the agents what to do and all that happy stuff. So you'll see it's in the pending mode there. So if I went over and managed my test controller, it'll tell you it's running tests. So it knows that they're active and they're available and being pushed out, right? So a lot of good information there. And did somebody already show, have you guys seen the platform as a service? So going in and changing your instance counts and things? A few people have? Okay. All right. So, yeah, people don't normally see that unless they actually deploy and use Azure as a deployment mechanism or an application platform. All right. So our test is in progress. So one of the great things about Visual Studio is we're going to get a lot of data right here. It might be bad data. Who knows how many errors we're going to get here, but I didn't run this test. So it's initializing all the performance counters on all the machines, so agents and servers and all the other stuff that we told it to capture. So it's going to go ahead and try and do all those things for us as part of this. All right, and so as it goes there, you're going to see it start to populate the computer counters on the side. So we're going to see all of our agents. We're going to see our computers that we had in our list that we wanted to capture. And then from there, we can actually go out and start dragging items onto the graph as well. All right. We'll start here in a second. And while we're waiting for this, we can have a short QA session. So if somebody has a question, I can answer. Yes?
Is there a way for you to set up a workspace that already populates what metrics you're indicating for so you don't have to set them up all the time you're running?
The test settings, you mean? The test settings file? Yeah, so by default, no. So they're just the ones out of the box, and then you go back and add your own every time, right? So there's no way to... Yeah, yep. There's no way to save those, right? They're per session, per load test session. So those would be your scenarios, the scenarios that we talked about. So when you're putting your tests in there and you're having the network capability, right, that they're associated to, and then the number of tests, right, you have the user profiles in there. You would normally do those in the web tests themselves and put them together.
So you would do multiple scenarios?
Yes.
So you can run one scenario simulating, for instance, load from different profiles?
You can. So you saw I put in the user and I put in multiple web tests. So those web tests are the scenario. So if you're doing building blocks where you have transactional pieces that are workflows for individual users, then you could definitely do that. All right, so my test aborted, which is awesome here. So we have some performance counters. We have some performance metrics on here. So kind of going back to your question earlier, too, about counters, right, and these dashboards. So the graphs are there just really to display the data. So we can also display the data that's not here. So by default, it's going to bring up, you know, just system under test and your key indicators and page response times. If you wanted to make a new graph, you could definitely just go in, right-click here, and you could add a graph. We could call it SQL, for instance. And then on the SQL graph, we could actually go in here and go to the computer and, you know, get down to SQL. Right, so if we're interested in SQL statistics, we could take those and we could drag them right back onto the graph. Right, so you can actually build your own graphs. When you save this, it will save those views with it. Right, so as part of that file. So, and then these statistics are actually stored in a database. We'll get to that in a second and how you view them. So there's a way to get to them. So every run is stored as a different profile in the database. So the runs are stored independently. So when you want to compare them for baselining, it becomes pretty important, right, to be able to view that. Yes. So lab, you can definitely use lab management. So if you're doing it through lab management, you know, you might deploy. So the difference between the two, right? So using it this way, the way I'm using it in Azure, you can't scale like that in lab management, right? You can't go into lab management. You get the environments that you can create, the templates, but they're really creating machines. They're not creating a scalable service, where this is going to create a scalable service. So I'm going to show you how to do that after. But in lab management, you might, you know, go in and deploy your application and then run against it, right? So that might be the scenario you'd use that in. But you can definitely use it in conjunction with lab management as well. All right. Perfect. So we have our metrics there. We ran our load test. It's it's finished. It aborted. We have some data here. We'll use what we have. So from this, we can actually go out. We can see our agents. They're running again. They're ready for a new test. So if we run it again, we can do that, which is pretty key. And then from here, the next thing I want to show you is, you know, we can go in and take a look at metrics using the dashboard. So there's a lot of metrics in here. You know, we could just drag and drop a ton of things on here. So if we want to see recompilations for SQL and, you know, maybe we want to see physical disk I/O and what that looks like, we could go in here and just drop those on, right? So by default, it's capturing everything for us. You can narrow that down if you want to capture specific countersets. You can do that too. But by default, it's capturing everything on the machine when you click that box. All right. So the next thing we're going to be able to do here is take a look at the statistics here. So we're going to go ahead and go to load test. Let's see. I'm going to start Excel. See if I have Excel in here. I don't. All right. So you'd normally view that in Excel. And for some reason, I don't have it on this machine. But in Excel, it gives you the runs, that your load run statistics. So it stores them per run in the database. And you'll see the name of your run at the bottom. So if we go back to the summary here, it'll have a name at the top somewhere. So it's load test 2, and then it has a date time on it. So when you take that, you go to the database, it'll have that run in there. So it'll have a run number associated to it. And then you can compare the metrics against each other. So if you want to use them for baselining, you can. Definitely. All right, so there's some other views here as well. So there's table views. So if you want to see, you know, errors, there's errors here. Timeouts and things like that. There's all kinds of things going on here from a error perspective. And then also detail on the other side. So if you want to see detail, which doesn't exist, you would usually see a stacked graph here. So it would have graphs that would be stacked. It would show you all of your load test runs, and they would be stacked in some order and length of time, right? So then you could see them matched up here. You also have the ability to move these windows around and zoom in on particular areas as well. So zooming this in would move the activity map at the top as well. So for some reason, I don't have that, and I'm guessing it's because it's aborted the test. All right, so there we go. So pretty straightforward from a load test perspective. The capture's back in the database in SQL. And then from there, you have the ability to do that. All right, so the next thing I want to show here is we're out in Azure. So it takes about 20 minutes to deploy the machines. So one of the things we can do, since they're already deployed, we can actually just switch right over to the scale piece of this. And we're at 3 right now. If we wanted to have 10, we would just move this to 10, right? So we'd just move this to 10, and we'd instantly scale our architecture from an agent perspective from 3 to 10, right? So it's pretty easy. And then once you save it, now you have 10 machines, right? So it automatically deploys, configures, and associates them to your controller. So if I were to go in here and pick, let's pick 15, and we save this, what you're going to see on this side is it's going to go ahead and start. running our machines, and it's going to start adding machines to it, is what's going to happen with that. So it's pretty easy from an infrastructure perspective to scale, right? The same goes for if you're running, Windows Azure applications. When you start to scale and you get, you need more machines, you can just go in and scale up. So it uses the same platform, same mechanisms, same deployment mechanisms as part of the things that you do in Azure development in Visual Studio. So you can see there's all the machines that are associated. So at some point, those machines will associate back once they connect to the network and stuff, and they'll be associated to my controller, so I can use them. All right, so we'll hang that one up for a second. All right, so let's get back over here. We'll spend the last few minutes here talking about summary. So one of the things that we want to get to, I showed you quite a few things today as part of Azure and load testing. You could use those Azure tools with anything, right? We use them with Visual Studio because most of our customers use Visual Studio, but you could use them with any platform, right? So it is platform as a service, so if you can script it out to install it and configure it, it's more than happy to do that for you. So one of the things we want to talk about is production readiness. So having load testing be part of your daily cycles and being at the end, just making sure that it's ready to go to production, right? So that you don't run into the scenario of, hey, we released it and we tested it with 20 people and we got 100 on there and it crashed, right? So making sure that you're ready for production and using good tools and methodologies to do that, right? So making sure that the tools and the process support doing load testing scenarios. It's pretty important. And then being part of that continuous delivery. So as you're doing your sprints or your agile development, making sure that load testing is not at the end, making sure that you don't build all your technical debt up all the way at the end when you got to fix it, right? Making sure that you do it during the process, becoming part of your automation that you do from an organizational perspective is really key. The customers that use this for continuous delivery, our customers, they find a lot of things through this that they fix before they actually get to production from a management perspective or from a production readiness perspective. And a lot of times it has to do with, hey, there's a missing index on SQL, or there's things missing that should have been there that if we released it out to the public, we wouldn't know until somebody used it, right? So we want to make sure we can catch it before then. There's also a lot of tools you saw for baselining and root cause analysis, so making sure that we can go out and capture how do we get back to fixing the problem? How do we baseline whether we're getting, better or worse at doing our development practice? So using these tools, we have the ability to capture the data to do that as part of this. So it's pretty key, right? So, we can all go out and write load tests. We can write our own load test mechanism in C# or .NET or whatever language you want to choose, just so that we have the ability to capture metrics, right, which is the most important thing during load testing. And then leveraging the cloud for the scenarios, right? So making sure that you can test it at what your user capacity is and not just saying, hey, we're going to test at 250 and, if we think it's, we're meeting 50% of the requirement for speed, that we'll be okay, right? So making sure that you can test in those real-world scenarios, especially for large services where you have, hundreds of thousands of users. So very key in that. So there's a lot of tools, a lot of things that you have the ability to use as part of Visual Studio. If you do have Visual Studio with MSDN, you do get free Azure benefits. So the customer, the scenario that we're in, they didn't spend any money. They actually used Visual Studio Ultimate with their Azure benefits, and they were able to load test 60,000 users without paying any money for hardware or licensing, right? It all just came with Visual Studio. All right, so I'll leave it to questions. So if you have questions, let me know. And before I do that, I also wanted to mention a couple things. One of the things I wanted to mention was there was some talks earlier about GSM, which is a system center piece for the diagnostics and analytics. Being able to load test as part of that mechanism to make sure your services are up and make sure that they are performing. So those services are definitely while they're in production, right? So you're monitoring, it's production monitoring. So GSM kind of plays into the story too. You can use web tests over there, but it does it on some interval and polling and gives you information back. What I've been talking about today is purely in the development realm, right? So before you get to production, and then hopefully not having to use all those pieces that are, GSM, and then having to be reactive about things that are in production already, right? Mm-hmm. I equate that to fixing the moving car, so we don't want to do that. So, all right, so I'll leave it open to questions. If you have questions, I can answer them now, and I'll be up here for a few minutes. And then lunch is in about 10 minutes or so. So, yes?
Can those machines, the agent machines, be in different places around the world?
Yes. So in Azure, you have the ability to pick your destination for your where you want your machines to live. There's 7 or 8 right now. So you could pick any of those geographies for your machines to live in. And the machines, I mean an instance, we had 20 machines in an instance. You might have an instance in different locations, right, where you're pulling them together so they could all share the same networks. Any other questions? Yeah.
It doesn't matter where your application or test server is, whether it's in Azure or wherever.
So it's important to note that whenever you're capturing metrics from those machines, the systems under test, that your controllers are close by, right? So your controllers are capturing all of the metrics from those machines, so making sure that they're close. So if you're putting your machines out in Azure, so platform as a service, then you'll probably want to put an infrastructure as a service machine out there with it to have the controller local, right? So there's no delay in the capture of metrics from those machines. It's all about bandwidth at that point, right? When you're talking about 60,000 users, you're talking about terabytes of data that you capture in a 30-minute run. So it can be a lot. Sorry?
Any guidance on user ID passwords for test controllers?
So the question was the user IDs and passwords for test controllers. So if you're on a domain, it's great. If you're not on a domain, you can use shadow accounts. That's what I did here. So I use shadow accounts back and forth. Use best practice around that, right? Yes?
Any best practices on ensuring consistent performance from your Azure machines?
After it's in production or before?
Just considering that your generator machines in the cloud are unknown resources.
Oh, true. So one of the things we try to do is not to stack user count associated to a machine. We try to stack user count based on CPU usage, right? So getting to 80% CPU is saturation. So as long as you stay below that, you're good, right? So once you get to 80%, there's a good chance that it won't produce the full load that you expect it to.
Are there any recommendations on being a good customer in Azure, considering you've got other customers there actually hosting applications, you're there generating load?
So we are in our own instance when we're doing it, right? So we have our own bandwidth, we have our own network segment, so we're not being disruptive. The amount of traffic that we generate for that is small compared to what's actually happening, right? It's minuscule. Yep. Any other questions? No. All right, I'll be up here for a few minutes, and thank you for your time.